All right, good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for coming. My name is Claire Luby. I'm working with Professor Irwin Goldman at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And today, I'm going to present some of my PhD work on carrots, some preliminary results that we have looking at phenotypic and genotypic diversity in carrots, and the intellectual property rights landscape and freedom to operate landscape that surrounds that. So, what is freedom to operate? What we're considering freedom to operate is whether we had the ability to use the different carrot cultivars that we were looking at in breeding without signing extensive contracts and or having cultivars protected in different ways. And so I think we can all agree that germplasm exchange is a pretty foundational aspect of plant breeding. We need variation to be able to select within. And over the past 30 years or so, there's kind of been this increasingly complicated web of intellectual property rights that surrounds plant germplasm. And so freedom to operate has changed for plant breeders over this time. And so one of the questions we were really interested in is, how do we know what we can use in breeding? And what does this freedom to operate landscape look like in carrot? And so here's just a quick primer on intellectual property rights in plants. So some cultivars, some germplasm is in the public domain. So that means you can basically use it for whatever you want. It's freely available to use. Then there's different types of protection, such as plant patents, plant variety protection act certificates, plant breeders' rights, and often these have a breeding and research exclusion. So material is able to be protected in some way, able to gain a royalty revenue stream back, which is important for supporting plant breeding efforts, but it does have this ability, and it allows for breeding and research often with those types of protection. And more recently, we've seen an increasing use of utility patents on plant varieties and on traits, as well as contract law such as licenses, material transfer agreements, and different types of contracts. And that can make material really complicated to use and sometimes essentially unavailable due to this chilling effect of using that material with those types of protections. And so why do we choose carrot? Well, carrot is a very important vegetable crop. It has both hybrid and OP cultivars available for commercial sale. There are public and private breeding programs working in carrot. And it's at a unique point in history to examine this effect of intellectual property rights on freedom to operate due to the fact that there are a number of cultivars that are protected and there are a number of cultivars that are available. Additionally, there are a number of different different market classes in carrot. They're used for different things, such as the baby cut and peel types. That's this imperator. They're very long and skinny. There's a number of different fresh market types, and there's a number of different processing types. And there is some crossing between the market classes, but generally the market classes have distinct phenotypes. And the imperator type is the focus of most U.S.-based breeding programs at this point in carrot breeding. So for my work, we looked at 142 commercially available varieties of carrot, and these were grown on replicated trials on two different farms in the Madison, Wisconsin area. There we are planting carrots. And we measured a number of different top growth and root characteristics of carrots, as well as doing Illumina sequencing of the 142 different cultivars. In addition to that data, we also looked at what the intellectual property rights on each of those cultivars were, and there was a lot of uncertainty when determining how available these different cultivars were. There was some ambiguity and uncertainty surrounding that, and when we weren't sure if a cultivar was available, we decided not to use it in breeding. We considered that not available. And so the different types of protections that we did see, there were a number of these different bag tag licenses that basically say, you know, by opening this package, you agree to these terms, and sometimes those restrict use in research or breeding. We signed a couple of different contracts to be able to use different cultivars in our research. There are a number of utility patents pending on carrot cultivars. None of those were actually included in this particular study, and there were no PVP certificates on any of the cultivars that we used. So 96 of the 142 cultivars were available to use for breeding, or we consider them to have this freedom to operate. So I'm going to share some of the preliminary data that we have, and this is an ANOVA of the phenotypic data. So I included a number of the different traits that we measured. The first column, anything in red, was had a p-value that was less than 0.05. And for most of the traits, we did see significant differences between cultivars. So, for example, root length here, significant differences between the different cultivars that we looked at. The second column was freedom to operate, so I'm comparing the group of cultivars that had freedom to operate with the group of cultivars that did not have freedom to operate. And again, we see that for most of the traits, there actually were significant differences in the means of those two groups, suggesting that the group with freedom to operate, for example, had a different mean root length than the group without. That said, we did a phenotypic principal components analysis using the phenotypic data, and this is colored by market class. It's probably a little difficult to see. There is some clustering, but really there's a lot of overlap. So getting back to that, those two groups, one with freedom to operate and one without freedom to operate, while those means were significantly different for a number of the traits, it doesn't necessarily mean that there wouldn't be some cultivars that were similar to those without freedom to operate that you could use in breeding to breed something there. So there's a lot of overlap. Looking at the principal components analysis for the genotypic data, this is again by market class. Again, a little bit of clustering, but for the most part, we see an unstructured population for commercially available carrot cultivars. These two principal components only account for about 10% of the variation that we see, so that's considered an unstructured, or basically an unstructured genetic population. We're working on figuring out if there is any significant differences there. This is the same graph looking colored by freedom to operate and not freedom to and having no freedom to operate. Orange were the cultivars that did not have freedom to operate. Green were the cultivars that did. For the most part, we see those cultivars on this axis and the ones that did not have freedom to operate on this axis here. However, again, we do see a little bit of overlap. So, just summing that up, there were differences in phenotypic traits between the group with freedom to operate and those without freedom to operate. However, there is some overlap in these groups. The genotypic principal components 1 and 2 only accounted for about 10% of the variation, which suggests we see an unstructured population for commercially available carrot cultivars. And we did see a little bit of clustering based on market class. However, it does seem that there's a lot of overlap, so that may not be a genetic distinction. So the next part of this project was that using the material, using those cultivars that had freedom to operate, we actually created 8 different populations based on market class and root color that are meant to encompass that diversity that we see in those different cultivars. So using 87 of the 95 available cultivars, we made 8 different populations. So here, these are the market class populations. We have this ball shape, a Chantenay, which is a processing carrot, the Danvers, which is another processing carrot, and Nantes, which is traditionally a fresh market type. And these populations are meant to be really diverse, sort of as pre-breeding populations people can hopefully use to continue breeding. Additionally, we have a number of different colored populations, so a purple, red, yellow, and white population, and again, those are meant to encompass some of the diversity that we saw in those varieties that did have freedom to operate. So in order to hopefully facilitate these populations being used and encourage people to use them and have that diversity remain available, we are releasing them under the Open Source Seed Initiative, which is a project that both Erwin and I have been involved in. And the idea is that there's this open source pledge that basically goes out with any seeds, and it says, you know, you have the freedom to use these seeds in any way that you want, but that you won't restrict them, and if you make a new variety using any of this material, it will also be available for others to use into the future. So that's how we've chosen to release these populations, so that hopefully that diversity that they encompass will remain available. So in conclusion, 95 of the 142 cultivars did have freedom to operate. We found that Imperator was the most restricted market class and also the focus of most US-based breeding programs. We didn't actually make a population because there weren't really any Imperator varieties available to use in breeding. We did observe phenotypic differences between the cultivars with and without freedom to operate. However, there was some overlap, and the genotypic principal components analysis suggested that there was an unstructured population in carrot. And so we found that carrot was at a unique point where there is still a lot of freedom to operate for carrot. You can still take a lot of those varieties and use them in breeding. However, we did observe this trend toward more restriction, as we've seen in a lot of other crops as well. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge our lab and all of our grad students, undergrads that have helped with this work. Also the two farmers that we've worked with for this project growing a lot of carrots and seed. And then also our funding sources from Seed Matters, which is a Cliff Bar Family Foundation initiative, the University of Wisconsin, the Ceres Trust, and North Central SARE. So with that, I'd take any questions. Thanks for listening. Yeah.
When you justified your work, you said that you worked with carrots because it is an important drug. What does important mean in this case?
Oh, well, so we decided we wanted, the question was, what did important mean when I was describing why we chose carrot? I guess I just meant that it's a significant vegetable crop. It has significant acreage in the United States. I don't have the number off the top of my head on what the actual monetary value on that crop is. Basically, we wanted to take one crop and explore what this landscape looked like, and carrot was a we already had done a lot of work on carrot, my advisor and I, so we chose to use that as the example here. But it could have been done with a number of different crops. We just used carrot. Did that answer the question? Okay. Yes.
What is the center of diversity for carrot, and are there any issues with the people that live there being sort of angry that this stuff is being used in less open sort of ways?
So the Center of Diversity is in Afghanistan and that region. In carrot, I don't know that it's been like a particular focus of that type of issue. However, I mean, obviously, with a number of different crops, we've heard about those types of sort of biopiracy or whatever. There aren't any specific cases of that with carrot. It has, it spread from there. It's been used in Asia and in Europe for a long time. So most of the cultivars here have a European history. They were all available in the United States, these cultivars. So yeah, I guess, I'm not sure if that answers your question, but yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So what's the, I guess, the driving force for plant breeders to use that material if they're unable to reduce any royalties from doing it at work?
Good question. So the question was, if you can't patent any of the material that's released under the Open Source Seed Initiative, what's the incentive there? So we actually, in working through that, that was a question that a lot of people had. It doesn't mean that the seed has to be free of cost, or that some benefit sharing arrangement can't be arranged between someone who's actually increasing that seed and selling it and the breeder. We've found that a lot of sort of freelance breeders, people doing breeding outside of an institutional context, have found it very helpful in that it provides sort of a registration system for their varieties, and they're able to track those. We are working on trying to figure out how sort of these benefit sharing or royalty type arrangements could be worked out under that. But basically the idea is that, I mean, we know that seed is a tangible object. It costs money to produce, or any crop, and also breeding costs money to do. And so how do we figure out how to support breeding while ensuring that, you know, the genetics within there remain available for people to use to continue to improve these crops. So uncertain, but I hope that helps to answer the question. So. And I think we're out of time.
Okay,
thank you.